Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, America. I'm Chad Pagano, former Army sniper, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and an avid lifelong hunter. And you're about to experience the wild game domain from the hunt to the hearth, airing live on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. And we have a very big announcement today. I am overjoyed to announce that a former guest of the show, Chef Jesse Riley, who is, if you've been listening, was part of the Wild Boar show that went
excellent. We had a lot
excellent.
Of fun doing that, right?
Right. Has been promoted by myself, the host, to official co-host, and she'll be a regular, a fixture.
Yeah. I'm so looking forward to this. I think we're going to have a lot of fun.
I love it. She did such a great job. And my other co-host, Chef Chris Gesualdi, is so unpredictable, and I can't count on him, and I love him, but
he went and took that schedule in the mornings and abandoned you.
Right. Well, he thinks working is more important than broadcasting, our show.
Yeah.
Then the hell with him, as they say. Of course, I'm kidding, Chris. Don't get all sensitive. I know you're an artist. You're going to get all weepy now. Can't wait to have you back. So it's going to be the three of us. Conducting the show.
Yeah, it'll be good. We got a lot of great information. And
right. I'm the funny kind of hunter guy, the way it's going to break down, and Jesse will be the smart scientist chefy type, if that works for the audience there.
I almost brought you a cute picture of pigs today, but I thought I'd...
No, don't start with me with the pigs. We already covered this. I like killing pigs because they're evil and they taste good. It's a perfect combination, and we already discussed this. And today, very exciting. But spring's in the air.
Yeah. Right? I mean, it's like peas and sprouts. And
right. And to me, you know what it is?
What?
It's baseball.
Yeah.
The Mets won 11-2 yesterday, right? Some guy named Cowgill, or who apparently plays in our outfield, hit a grand slam. So it's very exciting time. The weather's warming up. Yeah. Things are in bloom.
Yeah.
And this time of the year always says one thing to me, really. Trout fishing.
Trout and salmon.
This is the time of year. Growing up, my father, we would cut school. My father would take me out of school every April 1st, the opening day of trout season. And we'd get in his van, and we'd load up the gear, get in the van, and we drive to, specifically, we go to different places, but we go to this place out on Long Island called South Haven State Park, great state park, or maybe it was a county park, sorry. But whatever, we'd go there, and we'd line up. There would be cars going, lining the street, waiting to check in to go trout fishing, and I have such great memories. I don't know, it was probably 3 a.m, we'd get in line, and by sunup, they'd open the gates, and we'd all funnel in and walk to our fishing, check in at the booth, whatever it was, and then go to our fishing spot. And we would pull fish in left and right, trout left and right.
And what kind of trout were you catching back then?
Primarily lake and rainbows they would stock at this place, the DEC, Department of Environmental Control, here in New York State. And, I'm not a big fan of government overall. Don't get me started. But... I can't say enough about the Department of Environmental Control here in the state.
Well, the governor just announced on Monday that trout and salmon season opened in New York State.
And it's really a boom for the state itself.
No, it's a huge economic development issue, and it's been going on for about 50 years.
Yep. And the thing is, the trout of New York, and we're going to get into it a little more detail, but... the DEC does a great job stocking, our reservoirs, our lakes, some of our streams, rivers. So there's an abundance of these fish available to the average,
Right. Well, there are also a lot of free clinics because they really want people to go out and fish.
Right. And why?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a great activity. right? It's a sustainable food source.
Thank you.
Yes, sustainable food source.
So all you big shots running around talking about organic food, and I like organic food, and I want sustainability. Why don't you do something about it? Go buy a fishing rod today. Go to your local sports store. Go to Dick's. Go anywhere.
Right.
Buy a fishing rod. Get your fishing license.
And you don't have to spend a lot of money on that.
No.
Right?
$25. $20.
Right. I mean, if you're the kind of person who's like into it, yeah, you could go like tie the cute little flies and spend a lot of money on that, but you don't need to.
You know what, Jesse? Growing up, my father was into fly fishing. I mean, he took us out April and, you know, early April every year, and we would just use the spin rods mm-hmm. and, you know, worms. And you know, we would catch trout, but he was a serious, he still is, he's still here. Hi, Dad. He's still a trout fish, fly fisherman, and you know, he'd tie his own flies. It was mm-hmm. it was all year. It encompassed him. You know, he was tying his different flies all year. He had all the equipment, the waders, mm-hmm. the thing. You know, I never got into it at that level. I'm starting to think about it now. Mm-hmm. To me, it was always a bridge between my cabin fever. You know,
right.
when I'm just starting to get the itch to be out in the woods again.
Right, right.
It would bridge the gap to May 1st, which is the opening of turkey in New York, turkey hunting. And that's all I used it for. But now I have a 9-year-old son, and I want to bring him into the sport, you know, and he loves it. Mm-hmm. We hunted, not to plug the place, I don't even know if they're open anymore, Eldred Preserve. It's up in Sullivan County, town of Eldred. Mm-hmm. And they had a stocked lake there, private, and you could, you know, you paid per pound for the mm-hmm. fish, but what fun, man. You go there. And I think that's, you know, that's why trout fishing has become so popular. It's such a brilliant fish to catch.
Well, it tastes good.
It tastes great, which right. luckily, you know.
There's you know, look, not to go off on a tangent, but I don't think you should, like, go out and catch things that you're not going to eat.
No, absolutely. You know, right. I say at the end of my show, if you kill it, you eat it.
Right.
That's the rule.
Mm-hmm.
You want to smush a cricket? Fine, but you better eat it. And I feel that way about fish, you know, all wild game for that matter. But, you know, so it tastes delicious, but even the sport of it, you know, which I guess is just an added benefit. It's a fun fish to catch. It's a strong fish.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fish that's going to fight you, you know, so you use a nice light rod, a nice light line, and you're trying to pull in this monster, sometimes up to, you know, probably on average, don't quote me, 2 pounds,
mm-hmm.
which is a big fish, but, you know, anywhere up to 15, 18, and when we get into salmon, you know.
Right, well, salmon can get quite large.
Yeah, we're talking about ridiculous. And some lake trout up in the Great Lakes,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think the state record is 40 pounds or something, a lake trout, 40 pounds, and we're talking about, you know, now we're talking about trolling and real fishing on the Great Lakes. But that's the beauty of it. It covers everything from, you know, a fly fisherman at Connequot River State Park out of Long Island, you know, on this shallow lake-fed stream, catching brookies or stream trout, maybe some rainbows, to this, you know, the Great Lakes, where you're basically mm-hmm. out surrounded by water and deep water catching these giant lake trout. So it's a great sport, and I encourage everyone to get involved. I wanted to talk a little bit about the different kinds of trout available to us. We were discussing before the show,
mm-hmm.
To our producer's chagrin, because he said,
just don't talk about the whole show.
He's like, why don't you guys shut up and do it when you get on the radio? But, you know, New York has a proud tradition, a long tradition of trout. You know, there's two indigenous trout to New York, and I believe, what do we say, the brook trout
sure, right,
and the brown trout.
Well, it's actually, you know,
trout.
The official state fish.
It is,
yeah.
Wow.
The brook trout.
Who knew?
Yeah,
look at that. Well, yeah, I mean, based on the tradition of this fish, it makes sense to me. But, you know, the brook trout, you know, by itself, and since then we've introduced, the state has introduced rainbow trout.
Mm-hmm.
Lake trout,
right?
And they stock these fish, and so the thing is, you know, why does New York State stock thousands of trout every year? Well, first of all, we know it's a boon to the economy here in the state, but it's a sporting outlet. It promotes family activities. I mean, it's just great all around. And for such a strong fighting fish, The environment really affects them, unfortunately, you know, and so pollution, acid rain.
Well, I mean, there was a decision made to stock the lakes and rivers of New York and New Jersey because around the year 1900, think of that, like 113 some odd years ago, these fish were extinct.
Yeah, crazy.
And it was because of, you know, industrialization. You know, we had a lot of industry going up along the rivers.
Right.
And the pollution and a combination of blocking the dams.
Right, plus farming,
you know, runoff,
right,
lots of other
runoff
things.
Runoff from clearing the lands, mm-hmm, and pesticides, everything else involved in farming back then. And
right, so when they realized that the fish were now extinct, they actually got hatchlings and created this entire system of throughout the year before the fishing season starts, they're raising these hatchlings that they're then going to take by truck and release into these lakes and rivers.
Right, which we were talking about earlier. It was always a big deal for me out on Long Island, growing up on Long Island. We knew in May that the DEC would be coming around with their trucks,
right,
and releasing the trout. So we would find out, you know, where they were releasing them, and we'd go and make a day of it. We'd watch the release, and they'd have these big tanks, and they'd come to the shoreline and dump the trout. It was so cool to, you know, just see the whole procedure for the stocking. Really, really cool. You know, we were talking earlier too, Jesse, about the idea of, you know, so let's talk about the difference between, you know, wild trout,
okay,
so-called wild trout, I guess I would say, to,
right,
you know, because listen, the Adirondack Mountains, you want to go up there to still actual wild trout.
Yes.
You know, these,
yes,
isolated streams and lakes up in the Adirondack Mountains where not a lot of pollution, the water is aerated.
Yes, aerated.
Thank you.
Or oxygenated.
Yeah, that's a big word. I was trying to say that word earlier. I'm not going to embarrass myself. For some reason, I couldn't. So I say aerated. That's how we say it. You know, these brook trout up there are still flourishing. They're doing great. I mean, acid rain is starting to become a little bit of a problem for them. But the pollution problem.
Well, there's been a lot of work done by like river keepers and other environmental groups to clean up the Hudson.
Right.
And that's had a really huge impact.
Right. And a lot of organizations, based on the popularity of this fish, and again, based on the fact that they're a fun fish to catch, to go for, they're accessible, they're, you know, they're abundant, really, due to stocking. But they're a delicious fish. So you get these private organizations outside of the state also getting involved. You mentioned one earlier I never heard of, Jess. What was that? Do you remember that one? You had mentioned one earlier doing, maybe you didn't.
No, I didn't.
Sorry, I've been drinking. But I have one, and that one is Trouts Unlimited. Great organization, nationwide organization, but they do a lot of work, obviously, here in New York based on the popularity of trout. And they farm raise the... I don't want to say they farm raise it. They
well,
raise
well, there's
their
a
trout.
Difference,
right.
You know, there's a difference between
commercially farm raised fish that you could buy in the store.
Right. There's right. Like maybe people don't realize. Right. You have hatchery fish.
Right.
Which are, you know, eggs that are raised up and they become little fish and they get released back into a lake or a river.
Right. And that's and what
then,
I like.
Right. And then you have farm fish.
Boo.
Which are
Boo.
Like, you know, tilapia is farmed.
Boo.
Salmon is highly farmed.
Boo.
They're actually farming trout now.
Boo.
Right? And so there's that fish farming, and then you go off on the other extreme, which is like genetically modifying fish.
Right. And, you know, we have this industry, and I guess I'm sitting here booing. But if that's what you have access to, fine. I mean, I am going to fill my freezer full of trout by...
Well, you have a choice when you go to the supermarket, right? I mean, you have to know, right? So you should only buy fish from somebody, a known purveyor, and they... Look, there is a problem with people mislabeling fish.
Right.
Right? So you have to ask, is this farm fish or wild fish?
Also within that, the idea of these farm-raised fish being, I don't know if the term's genetically modified.
Well, there were farm fish who were just fed, you know, meal that's not what they would usually eat.
Yeah, here we go again.
Right? So, like, for salmon, for example, if you get wild salmon, it's got a beautiful red color when you fillet that salmon, when you open him up.
Right.
He's got a very strongly textured meat. It's firm. Farm salmon, on the other hand, doesn't eat the kind of feed that will give it that beautiful red color. So they have to put a dye in the food to make the salmon get pink.
Lovely.
Right? I've done this quite a bit because I, you know, do a lot of catering. And when I break open a farm salmon, I won't buy them anymore. The meat is like mushy and soft. It's not at all like the salmon that you know. You're talking about a fish that can be in a river and hold himself steady against a stream opposing him.
Right, so we're talking about the muscle structure.
We're talking about muscle
development.
Muscle development,
meat development,
right.
The stuff we're eating versus the stuff laying around in slop eating meal.
Right, and they're more susceptible to disease, so there are a lot of other issues.
You know what, Jess?
Yeah.
Let's take a short break.
Yeah.
We'll be right back, and we'll continue this discussion. We're live on the Wild Game Domain on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
You're listening to Quittin' Time by Pamela Royale on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surreyfarms.com.
Hey, welcome back. I'm your host, Chad Pagano, and you're listening to the Wild Game Domain on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Okay, so before the break, we were talking about trout in general, but specifically farm-raised trout, and we were discussing some of the problems with farm-raising them and, you know, mushy meat and dye being injected into my...
Right, well, they're also eating things that are not part of their natural diet.
Okay.
So, much like land animals that eat things that are not part of their diet, it upsets their system. Right, so then they're then susceptible to other diseases that they wouldn't usually get.
It sounds familiar. It sounds like you know, the food chain from A to Z, basically, right now. But okay.
So the added layer to this, right, is that you have farm salmon or farm trout, and now they're genetically modifying them. And there's a group called Aqua Bounty, which is got preliminary approval from the FDA. The FDA said they don't think there's any significant risk, although there are quite a few people that debate that. And what they're doing is creating a salmon that'll grow in half the time.
Of course.
Right? So they'll come to market sooner, but the thought is also that they'll use those hatchlings to populate reserves. Right?
Okay.
So they'll sell them back to state agencies to put them into lakes and streams. That's one idea.
Now, has this been going on? Do we know if this is happening now?
Well, the company's been working since like 1989 to create this new fish and to bring it to market. And there's about 10 days left on the review process. So I would tell people, if you just Google transgenic salmon or Aqua Bounty, you're going to find this, and we'll put it up, I guess, on the site too. But you should really get involved because you want to know if you have this on your plate, right? You should have a choice to know, do I want to eat genetically modified fish or do I want to eat wild line court fish?
Absolutely. It sounds like an American way of life. But why? Why do I care? What's it going to do to me?
Well, you know, there's quite a bit of evidence right now that genetically modified foods have an effect on us, you know, and there haven't been a tremendous number of studies done, but it's sort of an increase in allergies and inflammatory type diseases. And for us to introduce this fish into the market without any real testing, we don't know what this is going to do. It's like a totally new organism.
Great.
And, you know, I was looking at something the other day about genetically modified trout, and they were holding up a regular trout, and he looks nice. And they held up the genetically modified trout, and they were, like, so proud. It's like, look at his stomach muscles. Trout don't usually have these, but he has a six-pack.
Great.
Like, I don't want trout with a six-pack.
Right.
You know, trout maybe with Belgian ale, but not trout with his own six-pack.
Exactly. Now, so you mentioned these allergies that come about from eating this fish, and I think you mentioned earlier that you knew somebody and that they can't eat.
Well, it's funny.
Wild, like, trout now.
Right, because
they developed.
Well, people get these allergies to things that don't make sense, right? It's like all of a sudden.
Celiac disease.
Celiac, Crohn's disease. It's right. All these inflammations. And, I mean, this may be a separate show when we talk about pesticides, but it has a relationship.
Okay.
Yeah. And, like, there are people who can't eat salmon or trout, and then you wonder, like, how did that happen later on in life that suddenly you develop this allergy to something?
Right. Well, the comparison is, you know, celiac disease is a theory, which, you know, I believe in, that, you know, we've genetically modified all the wheat in this country, a lot of our wheat in this country. We've made basically super wheat
right
now, and the body, a lot of people, the body cannot process the proteins found in the super wheat. So, I mean, if it could happen in wheat, and we think it's happening there, and that's why we have so much, we hear about, you know, celiac disease now.
Right.
People with these gluten intolerance problems. You know, why wouldn't it happen with the fish?
Right, and then the problem is that once you develop that allergy to the genetically modified fish or the farm fish, then even if you go back to a wild fish, you have difficulty then
processing
the wild one.
Wow. See, that's scary.
So we'll get to the point where we just can't eat anything, I guess.
Yeah, and that's scary. You know what? I'm going to eat. You know why? Because I'm going to be in my cabin upstate. I'm going to stop paying taxes. Right?
Create your own currency.
I'm going to have my AR, not assault, my AR rifle, and I'm going to kill my own game, and I'm going to fish, and I'm going to eat like a king up in the Adirondack Mountains. So there. So yep. All you people in Brooklyn, have fun, because you're not going to be able to eat food anymore.
Well, unless we get together and try to do something.
I love where your head's at. See, I'm lazy about that stuff. I want to rant and rave, but I need someone else to step up and do the hard work.
No, I think we have
I'm the spiritual leader of this movement.
No, we have to become informed, and we have to seek out this information, because nobody's going to hand it to us.
Right. Which brings up the point of wildgamedomain.com.
Right.
Which...
You have a new website, right?
Right. My good friend Catherine Gordon has been nice enough to volunteer, and she's been getting this website up and running. So go check it out, first of all. And it's in its early stages right now. We have, I think, two or three pages. It has my bio, some other stuff, a link to the radio station. But this is where you're going to get all the information eventually. As we get things up and we mention a movement, we want to create a revolution, we will have the information. Jesse's recipes are already starting to pop up on the site from the Wild Game, the Wild Boar Show.
Yeah, we had that. We posted that one up there. If you heard the show 2 weeks
ago,
so
you could go to the site and get that great recipe. And then today, we're going to do another recipe, obviously for trout and
salmon.
Salmon, correction, sorry, same idea, which we didn't really get to today,
right?
But maybe you could talk about the relationship between salmon and trout, and you know how they're basically the same thing.
Similar.
And then she's got a beautiful recipe for us, and you'll be able to find that on the website.
Right. Well, the other thing, like talking about springtime, just a little segue here, is, you know, foraging. Like at some point, we're going to talk about foraging, I guess.
Right, and I already did a show by myself on foraging, and but we're going to bring it back with Jesse.
Well, the thing about foraging is that it's not like going to the supermarket. When you forage, things come out at certain times of the year, certain weeks.
Right.
So this week right now is a wild onion.
Nice.
And they're beautiful little shoots. They're kind of tapered at the end and curl under. And you can identify them because they don't look like flat like grass. They look rounder and a brighter green.
Right. And they're at this time of the year, obviously, they're outgrowing the grass, so you could see the height of them. You could identify them.
Right.
They got a distinct odor.
Right. So if you're not sure, you could, like, pluck one out, break it in half.
Right. And they smell like onion.
And they smell like onion. So for this recipe today, I decided to use those as part of the garnish.
Awesome. You know, when Jessie told me, she gave me a briefing on this recipe, I rolled my eyes and went, something like that. And then she,
court bullion, right?
Right. You know, because let me just say this, then I'm going to leave her alone to do the recipe because I actually...
No, I want you to interject.
No, but at the end of it, after she described it to me, I was like, you know, okay, that does sound good. And it's very spring-like, and I like the use of the foraged onions. But to me, you know, we used to go out. My dad, like I said, we go out and we catch a stringer full of trout.
Mm-hmm.
We bring them. We gut them, obviously. We bring them back. And we'd stuff them with some raw garlic, some butter, wrap them up in aluminum foil, and throw them on the grill. And just keep flipping them on the grill. And then eat them right out of the aluminum foil. So, you know, that's one way to go.
That is one way to go. I mean, it's great to eat fish, like, in the location where you catch them.
Absolutely.
There's nothing better than that.
Throw them right in the coals, wrapped in aluminum foil, you know, for a few minutes, 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And you got it. But after Jesse described this recipe to me, I got it. I understand now. So I'm sorry to interrupt, Jesse.
No, it's okay. I mean, I think like this time of year in the spring, you want to do something that is in sync with the season.
Absolutely.
Right? I think like we get further along in the year, summertime, grill, do other things. But I just thought right now, you know, if you're lucky enough to catch a beautiful salmon, or you can get a wild piece of salmon.
Right.
And you get some beautiful salmon fillets.
And we can do this
fillets.
With trout, right? If someone gets motivated today, goes out and gets a brookie mm-hmm. or a rainbow trout,
yes.
they could certainly
yes,
substitute.
Yes, it'd be a delicate way to prepare that as well. So the court bouillon, you know, is simple, right? You don't need a lot of stuff. You need water, some white wine, peppercorns, a carrot diced up, an onion peeled and diced, and some parsley. And you just cook that and let it simmer. And you're making the base for which you're going to poach the fish in.
Okay.
And poaching is nice because it allows you to gently cook the fish and to really control the doneness of the fish, right? Because we know for years people ate salmon and they thought it was only cooked one way, right? Like pink straw.
Right. Yum, yum.
Yum, yum. Pink straw. And, you know, you can eat salmon, you know, medium to rare, although I say very carefully, though, that this kind of salmon is not, you really wouldn't eat it raw.
Right.
Right. You want to cook it.
Absolutely.
So in this, we're going to like take a pan that your fillets would fit in and then slice up some other vegetables, you know, more carrots, celery, slice up an orange into wheels and some onion. And you're going to lay your fish pieces on top of that in a pan and gently pour that liquid, the court bouillon, around it. And then you're going to put a low flame and just bring it to a simmer. It's like you don't really want to see that liquid bubbling or boiling. It's just kind of very gently trembling around the edges.
Okay.
And about 8 to 10 minutes. And you can use a fork just to test for doneness in the middle.
Kind of skewer test that you want to see some structure from the fish, obviously, from the meat.
Right, and you can also tell, I'll say this, you can tell with a wild salmon, right, it'll begin to feel a little firmer.
Right.
Farm salmon, on the other hand, is still going to feel a little mushy.
Right, the mushy dye gets in the way of what it should actually feel like.
So, like, you can do this ahead, and then you can reserve the salmon in the refrigerator and take it out and let it get to room temperature. And then you can make a really nice, Chad, creme fraiche sauce.
Yeah. Okay, creme fraiche. Very nice.
Creme fraiche.
In my country, we just call it sour cream.
Sour cream.
That's all right.
It's like a cultured sour cream.
I get it.
Right. That with a little lemon juice and some zest and those recently foraged spring onions.
Yum, yum.
And then you can just plate the fish with some of that dressing on it. And this time of year, asparagus are out. Mm. You know, some nice roast asparagus or, red potatoes would be great.
That sounds great. It sounds like something also you could do with, like, a green salad, something like leafy.
Green salad would be perfect,
Perfect with this, something light for spring.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, it sounds good. And we're going to post this up
and
on the website.
And we're going to post it,
So you guys get involved. Get out there. Go catch a trout.
Go catch some trout.
Go catch a salmon.
And look
that's
around.
That's a little more of an undertaking we didn't get into. Go to the local reservoir and catch a trout. Go to New York State DEC website.
And look at all the free activities.
Right. It's a great website. They're going to list all the... Go to the hunting and fishing section. And research a little bit. You could get a license today. You could be out fishing. What time is it? It's 11:30. You could be out fishing by 1:30 today.
That's right.
If you get up and do this. So, you know, I want to motivate you to do it. You're going to have a ball. Take the kids out of school. Who needs school? And go fishing and enjoy it.
Right.
Well, listen, I want to thank Jesse for
thank
being
you,
here. This will be the last time I thank you, because now you're officially on the team.
So you don't have to thank me or...
Right.
Right.
So, you know, my arrogance, I'm not going to thank you anymore, because she's going to be a regular. I'm very excited about that. So welcome aboard.
Thanks, Chad. So
that's all the time we have today. And I'd first of all like to thank Jack for producing and engineering today's show. As always, you can find archived episodes of The Wild Game Domain on Heritage Radio Network or on iTunes as a podcast. You can also check out our new site, wildgamedomain.com. And remember, we're live every Tuesday at 11. Thank you. And don't forget, if you kill it, you eat it. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.